Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's get ready to rumble!
He's the fastest man on the planet. He'd have got there, rabbits.
Beers, beers, and more beers. I can't wait. I cannot wait.
What about Andrew King? Put him in the sack. Put him somewhere. He's too good for this game.
What a weird round in general. A lot of injuries, a lot of high-profile matchups that we expected to go huge that didn't. But one man that managed to navigate the round pretty well is the coach of the Savage Turbos, Brandon Savage, Sav's host of the Supercoach Experience. Sav, how are you going, mate?
I'm pretty good, Whisperer. How are you?
Pretty good, mate. Looking at your score, though, it looks like you're on top of the world with a pretty solid 1,600.
I mean, 1,600 isn't that bad. I feel like I could have navigated a bit better and navigated it better throughout the season. But there is someone who is above me, which is Timmy, who's also on our panel, who scored a massive 1,700.
Yeah, shout out to the Villi Army. A lot of things went his way this week. But as you and I both know, to go deep in Supercoach Classic, you do need a little bit of luck. And he managed to navigate that pretty well, mate. Looking at your team overall pretty quickly, put the VC on Nico Hines, but didn't end up looping. Decided to go the pod route and Adam Dewey. And definitely could have been worse. But I guess what was the thought process behind not taking the 166?
Well, funny enough, I actually couldn't do it. I had no one that wasn't playing today. I had Spencer Linu, there was Cody Nikarima and Payne Haas playing today, and obviously your Cody Walkers and everything like that. So I was pretty much forced not to be able to loop him. So I guess I got lucky in a way that I didn't, because Adam Dewey was my captain all week. So yeah, a bit lucky there.
Yeah, I mean, Dewey got a 144, so you couldn't have wished for anything better. I guess when you see Hines getting a 166 and you just think, shit, like, I can't take this. What am I going to do? And then you see Dewey come out and get a 144. It's always good. Mate, we'll address the elephant in the room, Tohu Harris. Looks like a suspected ACL, which is, it's just not good for Supercoach, not good for the Warriors, their run home. It's just, it's for people that held hoping to be positive, it's an automatic sell now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. ACL gone for the season. A lot of people might not have many trades, so unfortunately, this is a trade you probably got to use.
Yeah, look, if you're in my shoes, for example, I've got two trades left for the season, which we know isn't enough for the run home, which is poor planning. But the fact that Tohu is like 580K at the moment, we'll go down a little bit. It's just a lot of cash to be sitting there on the bench that, in a position where there's a lot of quality around, we've got guys like Cam Murray as well who are on the rise, even Payne Haas, if you've got the dual positions to get him up to prop. It's a trade you have to make and you just have to bite your teeth, isn't it?
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's unfortunate for the Warriors, but I guess the two shining lights from today's games were Matt Lodge and Adam Fillblake. A lot of people were concerned with the news of Matt Lodge moving to the Warriors as to how he would coexist with Adam Fillblake, but a very, very depleted side. Relied on them pretty heavily. I thought they were very impressive. But I guess the first game of the round, we can just basically classify this as some David Fafita junk that could have gone huge. Obviously, that disallowed try at the end of the game would have made him go berserk. But still a 68 from Fafita. It's not fantastic, but it could have been a lot worse, couldn't it?
Definitely take it. But I feel like people jumping on him this week would have liked a lot more. And that last try, geez, harsh to be disallowed, eh?
It would have taken him to about 110, I think we worked out in the Hemi chat group chat. I think 110, and yeah, you would have been loving life. I put the VC on Fafita, and 68 was nowhere near enough. We saw Brian Kelly get 99, probably the first decent score that he's had. You wouldn't suspect many teams competing in that top echelon would be still carrying Kelly, would you?
Not really. I feel like if you carried him, you probably haven't. Yeah, you probably haven't done that well. But yeah, I guess repaid the faith.
Yeah, the Titans have a pretty shocking run home as well, so not someone I would be targeting. Ash Taylor, the halfback that I started with, I think 63 was the highest score he's put out all year. Apart from that, mate, there wasn't too much to cheer about. Tino Fasumalawi with a 56. It's just not been the season for Tino with all the expectations that we've had on him. I remember he put out a 90-odd, and I think he had about 80 in base, and everyone thought that he was he's turned the corner and come back, but it's just not the way. Mate, what's your opinion on Ryan Madison? Is this the matter of old we've seen come back?
I think so. He just looks like he's more interested, and he must have been carrying like, or maybe the concussion was really hindering him, but he's come back. He looks good. The attacking stats are there again, and I don't know. He could be back. He's a play next week, that's for sure.
Yeah, look, after next week, Parramatta have a pretty horrific draw, but I think that's going to work well for Matter. Yeah, he might lose the tries, but the offloads, the tackles, the runs are all going to be there. Clint Gutho with 110 as well. Being sneakily one of the best fullback options this year with no Pap, and the fact that Ponga is sort of in and out of squads altogether. Nathan Brown has put together a pretty fantastic run of form in the last 6 weeks or so, becoming more and more of that ball play through the middle third, and he's generally pumping up those attacking stats. But the man that a lot of top teams would have traded for, considering how barren the hook position is, Reid Marnie with a 98, just continues to find those crucial attacking stats for his big middle forwards, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's for sure. I actually had the decision between him and Ben Hunt on the weekend, and I was eyeing him off, but I think the injury just really scared me, so I went Ben Hunt, and geez, I'm regretting life.
Yeah, we'll get to Ben Hunt, but not fantastic, but not bad. I mean, just the hooker position is just so shit this year. Like, we saw Jaden Brayley, and I was pretty happy to call him one of the buyers of the season after the first five or six rounds, averaging 70, only cost teams 280K or whatnot. But it's just that attacking stats has just been lost all of a sudden from Brayley, and it's just fallen off a cliff. And we know Connor Watson had peaked in value for a lot of teams. He was sold, but looks like Reid Marnie is head and shoulders above the rest, considering Harry Grant sort of in and out. Look, apart from those sort of four, I mean, Hayes Dunster, some teams would have had him. I doubt many would have played him. But Isaiah Papali'i, 54. Look, we touched on your show earlier in the week that IPAP is the most owned player in Supercoach, but seems his scores, we used to bank on him getting sort of a consistent 80 to 90 every week, but it seems to be few and far between. It seems to be more of a 130 one week and a 50 the next. It's just he's too crucial and too highly owned to sell, isn't he?
Yeah, you don't sell him. 50.6% owned, and he's got that ceiling. Yeah, he's just a plug and play.
You just ride the lows because you know that the highs are coming in abundance of spades. Speaking of the highs, mate, one man that's come back for the Manly Sea Eagles, Josh Schuster, I think was the best on ground by far, probably followed close by Ola Kawatu. Both those guys got high 90s respectively. Fantastic to see Schuster back for the guys that held him.
Yeah, 100%. I was one of them and very excited as a Manly fan to see him back. And I didn't realize how much of an impact he makes on the side. He's such a spark plug. And when Tom Trbojevic is out of the side, definitely look for him.
I remember when Schuster burst onto the scene, I think it was like round 4 or 5, and I had Moylan, and Moylan had a couple of good scores. So he had those in his rolling average. And I just thought, look, Moylan's still going to make some cash and I'll flip him on. I didn't expect huge amounts from Schuster. And I think a lot of teams that didn't pick him up are regretting the renaissance of form that he's had. Ola Kawatu, I know a lot of the guys, obviously we're in the THC, who are coming third overall in terms of overall group. So there's a lot of elite players there. A lot of those guys are discussing Ola Kawatu for potentially Tohu Harris. Are you on that same sort of board, or are you a little bit put off by just the huge amount of attack that he's gotten?
I mean, I haven't actually considered him, but I know Maxi, who's a massive Cade Cuss fan, and Cade Cuss, the resurgence is back. I don't know why he hasn't played much more halves than he has this year, but bloody love Cade Cuss. But he's got Ola Kawatu, and I think Manly's got a good draw, and with Tommy in the side, he can just feed him through them holes. I don't know. It's not a bad shout, but I feel like there are better options, like, I know, like Ryan Madison, who looks to have resurged. I don't know. I wouldn't jump early, but I'd give it a week or two.
You mentioned Cade Carson. Look, he's probably not overly Supercoach relevant coming home, but the fact that he's dropped down to 178K is a pretty much bottom dollar price for a guy of Cade Cuss quality. I think he's definitely someone to look at for potentially next year if he can get some game time, but it's always a problem at Manly for him is getting game time. Mate, 78 from Ruben Garrick didn't really do a whole lot that game, which that's always promising to see him at fullback, isn't it?
I'll take it. I'll definitely take it. Next week, Tommy's back, so expect much more from him then, because he gets his stats from like hit-ups and goal kicks, so he'll just get them tries added on to that once Tommy comes into the mix.
As a Manly fan, mate, vintage foreign?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. That Brad Parker play, it was all four.
Oof, that little short ball, great hole running there by Brad Parker. I really like that. Moses Sully had another great game as well. Morgan Harper also got 61. I guess we'll scroll all the way down to this Manly side, though. Jason Saab, 11. We know what we get with Jason Saab with no turbo.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, he was the number one most traded in. I couldn't believe it, and I said it all along. I hate saying I said it, but I think we all said it, that without turbo in the side, he's pretty much got nothing. So 9 and 11 in the last 2 weeks, it's pretty much what you're going to get without turbo, but I expect next week that he's going to pick it up again probably.
And who played Saab both weeks? This guy. So, yeah, fantastic. I mean,
that's Vince's whisperer.
Yeah, definitely. Just putting the curse on players left, right, and center. I mean, I was very vocal about how poor I thought Jai Arrow would be this year, but I think I've been even more critical about the people that bought Saab in after that big week. It's just, he was 480K. I think over 5,000 people brought him in. And yeah, it just baffles me. And I think this is what was on the cards. I mean, I put a post up about his average with turbo. With turbo, it's about 65. Without, it's less than 20. So, yeah, you dig a little bit deeper in the numbers and you see that average just doesn't hold up. For the Dragons, mate, Jack Bird, a guy that I didn't think would flourish too well in the centres, a guy that I had penciled in to play a bit of 2RF this year and be a genuine option. But the fact that he was 380K, I think, coming into preseason and playing in the centre wings, I generally put the red line through him. But he's been sneakily good for this Dragon side, who have massively overachieved, I think, considering a lot of people would have had them for close to the spoon.
Yeah, he's been really good. Jake actually got him in as a pod for round 13, I think, and didn't play him this week. And I was absolutely baffled because his team's a little bit weak here and there. But yeah, he's been great, and he's getting attacking stats quite often. He looks a very crucial part of their side.
Apart from attacking stats, there's some forwards with Josh McGuire and Josh Kerr. There wasn't a whole lot here to cheer about for the Dragons. Do you see them making the top eight, mate?
I've looked at the ladder, right, and it absolutely baffles me how they're still in the eight. I think they're seventh at the moment, but yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous they're still there. I think they can probably win enough to stay in the eight. It just depends on the teams around them. I don't think they'll have a run of three or four games or anything, but if no teams are going to willing to catch up with them, then it looks like they're going to be there.
We've got the Dragons on 16 points, then we've got the Sharks, the Knights, and the Cowboys all on 14. We know from Supercoach Prep how good the Knights' run home is, and if KP is back, I can definitely see them making a surge for the top eight. We'll touch on him eventually, but Sean Johnson, he just looks like he's checked out. So I'm not too sure with the Sharks and how they're going to move forward. So, look, I think the Knights are going to make a play for that eighth spot, and the Dragons might just hold on for that seventh spot. So definitely great signs from the Dragons, considering, yeah, like I said, a lot of people would have had them close to the spoon, if not getting the spoon. Mate, the Roosters, 34 over the Cowboys, 18. A lot of people jumped on Tamalolo after his fantastic output, and he repaid with another 72. It's hard to go with Lolo considering how poor his minutes have been and his production.
I didn't actually realize he did that well. So the fact that he can still score like that in games like that that were kind of, it was tied up until towards the end. I think if you didn't get him in for round 17, you're probably not worth getting him in. But if you got him in, he'd be a good play every week.
3 effective offloads, 4 offloads, a tackle break, 11 hit-ups over 8 metres, 17 regular hit-ups and 28 tackles. No attacking stats in there, which I guess is the positive thing for Lolo owners. We know that he had a monster score the week before. He busted through the middle and got a line break, which boosted it. But yeah, you see Lolo with a 72. I guess that piques your interest considering how lowly priced he is. But it's probably not a play that I could make confidently. But Hamiso Tabuai-Fido at fullback, I thought looked very, very good.
Yeah, and he's also got a run at fullback by the looks of it. So he's definitely a watch as a pod if you've got trades.
Reece Robson, a guy that I love at hooker, just doesn't get the minutes with Granville there. 96, Drinkwater with an 80, Tamalolo with a 72, as we touched on. There's not too many names in this Cowboys side. A lot of people would have went Tom Dearden as a bit of a plug and play for round 17, but I doubt people would have had the reserve on him. For the Roosters, though, Matt Ikavalu, Brett Morris 2.0, just on the wing there, catching tries, scoring them pretty easily. Sam Walker also laying them on, both those guys, 120+.
Yeah, very good. For Ikavalu owners, he was looking like he was probably going to be on the outer for a bit, but then last 2 weeks he's backed it up and repaid faith for the owners.
chuck Ikavalu in the book of tips I've told people to get on but didn't get on myself. Story of the season. Drew Hutchison, probably one of the worst 5'8s in the comp, but continues to do a job for this Rooster side with 119. Fullback Joey Manu, we know he's another level with 89. I think people that bought Manu for the round 17 matchup were loving the idea that Teddy was rested. And as I said, we know what Manu can do moving to fullback. Is he someone that you really probably shouldn't be looking at moving forward with Teddy coming back into the fullback slot, is he?
Not anymore. I feel like if you were on Manu the last 2 weeks, it's probably a good idea to look at selling him in the next couple of weeks, but maybe just see how he goes at center and how the team cohesion works.
The next man would have broken a lot of teams or had them jumping for joy. Named on the bench, Angus Crichton, pretty much with his first or second touch, just burst through the hole and bagged a try and effectively went on to make a 79. A guy that I put on the bench after hearing the news and subbed in Tohu Harris. That worked out fantastically. Did you end up playing Angus?
I don't actually have Angus. I sold him in round 2, so I'm very lucky.
That was when he was suspended, wasn't it, for the week or two?
Yeah,
from memory.
I sold him for Fifita, and Fifita went gangbusters from there. So it was a good move in that sense of things, but not having Crichton for the rest of the year is kind of hurt me inside because he's such a good Supercoach player.
Well, that was my next question. Obviously, you're pushing for top 1K. You've had a pretty great season. You've had a couple of picks being nailed with Fifita early on, Luke Brooks as well, starting the season, averaging 60. If you're going to push that top 1K spot, is Crichton a guy you're looking to target?
Mate, I have one trade left, so
you're in worse shape than me. I thought you were doing good. Jeez.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely terrible with my trade. So I have one trade left. So I mean. I've got to see what happens with Hines, whether he goes to center and if he flops at center. I don't have...
That's the thing with Hines. Like obviously, we'll get to his fantastic output, but the talk was that he was going back to the bench, he'd be an automatic sell. But with teams running like low on so trades, if he gets shifted to centers, I think teams are probably forced to more or less hold him, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. And especially myself, I have him in the center wing area. My fullbacks are Tom Trbojevic, Adam Dewey. My 5'8s are Cody Walker and Josh Schuster. So really got to sell one of them. And with one trade left, you can't use them luxury trades with no trades left.
Well, that's the thing. It's a bit of a pod move to not have two premium fullbacks. You've obviously got Turbo, who's by far and away the best player this year. But you've also got a pod and Adam Dewey, who could obviously slot into 5'8 if you had the trades, but you don't. So you're running with a pretty good pod play there. Mate, probably the play that was going to be one of the most owned next year, but his value is slowly starting to dwindle away considering he's just scoring tries every week. Billy Smith, look, great to see him get some footy, but not great to see his price go up for next year.
No, it's not good, is it? I feel like Joseph Suwali being out is really hurt Supercoach for next year. It's going to make it hard enough as it is with Cleary and Turbo being so much, but yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, he was a guy that I was definitely targeting if he was going to be under 300K, but back-to-back weeks of scoring tries. He's had a couple of good scoring weeks. I think he had a 40 last week, which wasn't fantastic, but a 77 this week. It just hurts his value for next week. Mate, a guy that I touched on your podcast, I'll put this one as a little checkbook win, Victor Radley with a 75, had a fantastic output in base last week, some attacking stats this week, which is what we hope for, a 75 from Radley. The fact he's available at hooker makes him really enticing.
I mean, I was going to reply to you last week saying I hated the trade a lot, and he's never really been a Supercoach player, but he's looking the goods at the moment. I'll give you that one.
I think he was less than 350K, and the fact that he put out 58 points in base, but the fact that he's also available at hooker, I think that was the thing that enticed me towards Radley. We know that when he sinks up in that middle third, he's one of the best ball-playing 13s in the comp, and we saw that on the weekend. Putting through a try assist there, which is always nice. Atili Tupanua, this guy rocks all diamonds. If he doesn't score, we know he's an 80-minute, 35-point scorer. When he does get some attacking stats, 71. A guy that I started with at the start of the season and controversially said he was a sell after 1 week after he got a 75. I think I just wasn't happy with the base. It's just rocks all diamonds with Satili. He's probably not someone that you target, even though Boyd Cordner has retired.
Yeah, I feel like if you didn't get him round 17, don't get him now. Back to Radley just quickly. I think with Radley back in the side, Tedesco is an absolute premium option at fullback coming up. Radley just makes the attack so much better.
Yeah, that's the thing. On Twitter, I put a post up saying if Turbo is a must-have for next year, like if we're starting with Turbo no matter what, who do we pair him with? And the fact that I think we're going to get Tedesco at a pretty reduced price, I expect him to be a similar price to what Turbo was this year, which was about 570K from memory. And the fact that Kiri's going to be back, you've got Radley there as well. Those three are electric through the middle, aren't they?
Yeah, I think especially with them two back, it's a no-brainer. Teddy Turbo next year. I know it'll be very tempting to go Pappenhausen, but I feel like Teddy Turbo.
Yeah, that's the combo I'm thinking, mate. One person that I'll touch on, and it was a trade that I very much advocated against. A lot of people were looking at bringing him in with Sam Verrills, and just that major injury really put me off. And his workload just isn't there, is it?
Sam Verrills, yeah, no. I think Henry, who was ranked first, was on our show a couple of weeks ago, and he was eyeing him off as well. I hope he didn't pull the trigger, because I feel like people with lingering injuries like this just never come back the best. But he's definitely someone to look out for next season with a full preseason under his belt. Hopefully he can come back strong.
Definitely. I mean, you touched on that. Does that put the red line through Tohu starting round one for you next year?
Tohu?
Yeah.
I think getting injured this late in the season might make him not eligible to not recovered in time for next to start next year. So who knows? I wouldn't start with Tohu.
Even if he was available for round one, I think with that major injury history, I wouldn't go there. Look, someone that I would love to start with every year if I could is Tom Starling. But the fact that he just doesn't get minutes at this rate, so when he does get minutes, he puts out phenomenal attacking output, but doesn't, just for some reason, Ricky Stewart prefers Josh Hodgson. And I've been very critical. I don't think Hodgson is a fantastic footballer. I'd much to see Starling start there. Look, he started at a sky-high price this year, but if he does get minutes next year, Tom Starling has to be someone that teams keep an eye on, especially with how barren the hook position is.
Josh Hodgson is a good player, but I hate him. I hate him. I think in the middle of the field, he's a good player. I mean, no doubt he's a good player, but Tom Starling, he just suits that Raiders side so much. I don't know.
Mate, Corey Hadawira-Naira, a lot of people were on the bandwagon to sell him, and rightfully so. Couple of weeks with poor scores, the base just fell off. The first 3 weeks for Corey Hadawira-Naira, he had great attacking output with low base. That put me off him. And then the next 3 weeks, he had some great phenomenal base, and that got me back on him. Obviously, fell back off again. But this is the sort of form we see from Corey back in his Bulldog days, 124.
Yeah, obviously, he's been told to pick it up. Otherwise, he's losing his spot. So hopefully, Ricky just keeps on his ass and he keeps the output going.
This is a trade that I never really got behind, but a lot of teams benefited from it. Bringing in Xavier Savage this late in the season seems to have paid dividends.
Yeah, my cousin, bro. Nah, he's not my cousin, but I think playing him as a pod play and looks like he's going to stay at fullback for the rest of the season, he's definitely someone to play on matchups.
Very different player to the guys like Bailey Simonson and Caleb Aiken, but I just couldn't get behind another Raiders fullback with how poorly they scored. You talked about Corey Hadawira-Naira having to pull his finger out or he loses his spot. He would lose his spot to Hudson Young, who also had a pretty great game with 103. A guy that was genuinely on my radar after like round three with some great attacking output, then fell off a cliff. Good to see him come back. I would doubt a lot of teams have. A guy that I guess is the Raiders strike winger, and this would only be a play for head-to-heads only, I'd say, based off matchups. But I guess, what are your thoughts behind head-to-head players getting around Jordan Rapiner?
He's been bumping out really good scores and very silently as well. I feel like I wouldn't have the balls to do it for myself, but if you've got trades and you're a head-to-head player, it wouldn't be that bad. I just couldn't do it myself. But he is producing.
Mate, it's bothering me looking at this. The green highlighted name, the fact that I played him this week, Sean Johnson, 17, we can't ignore it. Yep. Do we think this is the way to go for Sean Johns moving forward? The fact that he isn't goal kicking and the fact that he has signed that Warriors contract, do you think this is the end of Sean Johnson?
I don't think it is. I think Braden Trindle is the death of Sean Johnson. I feel like they go to Braden Trindle a lot more than Sean Johnson. I can't believe I'm saying that because Chad Townsend was always the one I thought was hindering him, but Braden Trindle just... Yeah, he's not quite the same. He doesn't share the responsibility with Johnson as much. So, and without the goal kicking, I don't know. I feel like it's just a lean period for Johnson, but I don't think he is the premium half to end the season. I think Cleary, Daly Cherry-Evans, and Jerome Hughes are by far the top three.
Yeah, I really love Cherry Evans with the run home. Mate, I have a lot of new players on my social medias that message me looking for advice and stuff. And when Sivitalikai came back into the fold, myself, you, every podcast out there hit the Talakai drum home and hard.
Yep.
And a lot of new players have messaged me like, what are you talking about? Like, what is this hype surrounding him? It's just Talakai playing through the middle, not on that edge, hitting off Johnson. It's just not the same, is it?
It's not, and I feel like Supercoach has evolved. The center wing second row that you're aiming to get in to start the season because they've got that good base just isn't good enough anymore. I feel like this center wingers and wingers are scoring way more than the second rowers at the moment. So I feel like you're left behind if you've got a second rower taking up a center wing spot.
It's the other way around now, mate. Gone are the days where you used to play a back rower in your center wings. Now with guys like Tane Milne, you play your wingers in your back row just with how high their ceiling is. And that's the thing. Like this, I think if we had to pinpoint a reason why my season has gone so poorly, it's because in the preseason, I banged on about base stats and how good they are. But the fact of the matter is, with these new rule changes, you need those high ceiling center wings. These guys that if they don't score are going to get you 10. But when they do score, it's going to go huge. You guys like your Josh Adokar, who's averaging 65, your Alex Johnston. Ruben Garrick's a poor example because he does have an okay base, as with Brian To'o. But those high-ceiling guys are the way to go, aren't they?
They definitely are. And I feel like if you're happy with a 50 or a 60, you're going to fall behind because the next best player is scoring 130.
Gone are the days of Britton Nakora, Kurt Capewell, and John Bateman, mate.
Yep.
I'm in those. It's a bit of, just egg on my face, considering how vocal I was about cheap center wings at the start of the year. You need these premium guys, I think, to catch up, as you said. Like AJ in the last couple of weeks has been phenomenal, even this week with the injury. When did you sort of realize that's the trend? After the rule changes and the blowouts?
I don't really know. I feel like the SC playbook pointed it out last week, and you subconsciously think it. Like throughout the season, we've been building our team based on these sorts of players. But then until someone actually points something like this out, you don't realize that you're actually building your team a certain way. And shout out to them boys for actually pointing it out, because next season I probably would have thought of it. I would have thought putting a second row in center wing, but I think you got to tackle it differently.
Obviously, a little bit off topic, but do we just bin the front row forwards next year? Do we just take a 50-point cheapie?
Yeah, I think so. Although my front row has scored very good this week, Haas and Adam Fanua-Blake. So if they can keep pumping it out, they might be someone to start with. But I think as we've seen, the front rowers, as the year goes on, are getting fitter, and maybe they're not to start the year because the front row is obviously the bigger blokes.
I mean, I think apart from Payne Haas, who was just his cardio was just through the roof. Like Payne Haas is just an absolute freak of nature. I maintain he's the best front row forward in the game, and just what he can do for his age and just his motor, I think he could play 80 on his ear. I think so too,
and he's getting that step and attacking threat back. At the start of the season, he didn't have that at all. He was just running the ball and tackling, but now he's looking to score points and he's looking to make an impact. So I love that from Haas.
One man that I haven't owned all year, and it's probably the key reason as to why my rank has been so bad. I thought he had a 2-week shelf life, and then Munster went down, and then Pappenhausen went down, and he's just been in sides ever since. Nico Hines, 166, probably the best player. The best player that isn't in a team's starting 17. What he does is just phenomenal.
He's excellent. He looks like Heath Ledger. I love him.
I saw that. I did see the comparison. Shout out to you with the great call.
Yeah, I honestly didn't think of it till last night. But he's a great player, and his goal kicking. I think he keeps his spot as well.
He keeps his spot. At where though?
Probably center with George Jennings going down, which is huge news. Probably news you didn't want to hear.
We see Remus shifting out and Nico at centre.
Yeah, I think so.
I guess the positive thing is it is that weak centre side. The other centre, Justin Ollam, what an absolute machine he is. 124 from him. A guy that just you don't want to be up against, even in an NRL standpoint, just an absolute nightmare to handle. I think he sent Kurt Mann spinning.
I think at least if you're the winger, you know you can come in on him because he won't pass the ball out to his winger. I mean, he's been good some weeks, but there's other weeks where he just doesn't like passing the ball, eh? But shout out to him. He's finally produced some good games, and yeah.
I think this is the first time we've seen both Melbourne halves fire together from a Supercoach standpoint. Obviously, they play fantastically themselves, but Munster with a 115, Hughes with a 96. I've been a bit iffy on Munster all year, mate. I'll be honest, I didn't really see him as that option running home, but Cam Munster, we know that the back end of the year, that's when he really finds his gear.
Yeah, Munster's an interesting one. I was looking at him as well. I feel like he hasn't produced to start the year. There are a lot of good options in the 5'8 area, but Melbourne are always going to score points and he's going to be part of it. So you can't blame anyone for wanting to go Munster.
I did a bit of a form review on Munster and we say that he didn't fire and it's very, very a valid point because he didn't have any huge scores. But I think he had, in the first six rounds, I think he had three scores over 70, but none above 90. So he was just floating around that average. I think he had an average last year of 80. And I think he was maybe averaging 81, but not really going much higher or lower than that. So that's what, I guess, put people off.
Yeah.
Remus Smith didn't fire great for people to start the year, and I doubt anyone have him, but a great buy at the time and now finding form.
Sorry, was that Remus Smith?
Yeah, Remus.
Yeah, Remus Smith. He's been real good for Timmy, and I don't know. I feel like if you've got him, it's time to sell, but with that news, George Denning's down, he is a good option for the wing spot. So if he's going to play wing, I would definitely hold if I had him.
Big body, good under the high ball. I expect a lot of kick targets to be going towards Remus.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah.
Mate, another Smith. What do we do when Harry Grant comes back with the cheese?
I feel like you get them both. I feel like it'll be a great plan to handcuff them.
Yeah, I agree. I was never huge on Brandon Smith because it was one of those guys that was so frustrating to own because he'd be on 30 the entire game and then just pull two attacking plays out of his ass in the last 5 minutes and then just bump him up to 100. No, that was always the frustrating thing, but you've got to put a little bit of bias aside and yeah, he just continues to put in the work week in, week out. We saw Mitch Barnett move back to 13, but, I mean, 61 is not what we were seeing from him at the start of the year, looking like one of the genuine gun options, averaging 75. But for some reason, Adam O'Brien loves Lachlan Fitzgibbon, and that's left Mitch Barnett out in the cold.
Well, Mitch Barnett played 80 minutes at number 13 there. I think he shifted to the edge, and Fitzy played 63 minutes. So 61 in 80 minutes, it's not what you want, but we'll take it, and he's definitely a hole going forward. Hopefully, he can build from that.
Bring back goal-kicking Barnett on the left edge, I say.
Oh, he's the best goal-kicker in the side. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, apart from the Knights, it was a pretty tough day out. We saw our mandatory 45 from Jaden Brayley, who didn't really do a whole lot. Tyson Frizzell, a guy that I'm banging his drum for the run home with a 43. But what is doing with David Clemmer this year, mate? 18 and just fallen off the wagon completely.
I think he's a victim of the new rules, and the new rules are going to phase certain players out of this game. And someone like David Clemmer, who was one-dimensional as it was, it's not going to be enough. He's going to need to find more energy and somehow develop his game next year.
If the Warriors could have pulled this off, it would have been one of the greatest victories in recent memory for me. They went down to the Penrith Panthers, but I think the story is just how depleted the Warriors were and how good they played.
They, hats off to the Warriors. I feel like they've been really good this season and especially last season as well. And I guess this season they're doing the same thing, but they just keep dealing with the hand they've been given. All the injuries, RTS and Harris gone in the first 15 minutes. Hats off to them. And they've picked up a bloody great buy in Reece Walsh.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was topped by Matt Lodge, who did get some attacking stats, but Adam Fanua-Blake, I think he may have had a line break assist, which is like 8 points, but apart from that, 72, pretty much all in base. He's looking like a ripper buy, considering how lowly priced he was. I think he was 480K. Mm-hmm. As you said, mate, Reece Walsh got an 81. He was robbed of a try assist. That has to be updated eventually. He is my second fullback for the run home. Went a bit of a pod move there, and He is a genuine superstar and won't be too far away from seeing him in that Queensland jersey.
Yeah, I agree. I like the Reece Walsh move for the run home. The young players like this trying to make an impact, they're always going to be part of the attack because they want to show their skills. So get on him now if you don't like any of the other options.
A really good buy that I was really happy with the Warriors picking up is Dale Mateni's Lesniak, and a lot of people would have given him shit because he was in a Bulldog side that struggled. But I think DWZ was one of their best players, and he pumped out a 62 this weekend. Pretty good pot option for another one of these head-to-head matchup players, considering how good the Warriors' run home is.
Yeah, pretty good. I feel like myself, I wouldn't jump on him. I feel like I'm saying that a lot today, but personally, I wouldn't do it because I feel like the Warriors don't go to their wings a lot, but there could be a week where he pumps out 100 or like 2-3 tries. So if you want the chance to jump on him with a week like that, then do it based on matchup, I guess.
I guess for head-to-head players, that's what you're looking for, isn't it? Like those guys that could really set your head-to-head matchups apart. Mate, we're looking at hookers considering how barren it is and the fact that Tohu Harris is out. Do you think this is going to benefit Josh Curran, or do you think it's going to benefit Jazz Tafunga, who we can slot into the hooker position?
It'll have to be them both, surely. Josh Curran probably still only plays 40, 50 minutes, but I think Jazz Tavanga is the real benefit of from this. I think he averaged like 55 to 60 when Harris was out earlier this year.
Also the fact that Wade Egan's probably going to be out for a little bit as well.
Yeah, I think that's what I was thinking as well. Wade Egan.
Mate, we're talking about Wade Egan replacements, and if you picked up Cody Nikorima for round 17, it's been tough sailing, isn't it?
Yeah, I actually picked him up quite early before round 13, so I've ridden the highs of him, but I've also ridden the lows with him, and he's not looking like he's a good buy option or even a good hold option. So, yeah, grim for the owners.
In no man's land. Look, we touched on him at the start of the show, but we can't sort of brush past it. A six from Tohu Harris coming into the game with a shoulder sort of niggle, but it was that knee that went for him, and I think that's devastating for the Warriors, who are looking to make a serious run for the finals, and I just can't see them having that cohesion without their star man with Tohu Harris there.
I mean, I see them putting up a fight. I feel like they've got good heart.
I think that's just the Warriors' culture in general. Like, they're always going to put up a fight. Do you see them being that genuine threat to maybe make a run for September?
No, but I feel like they can still possibly make the eight because they've got Fenua Blake, they've got Lodge, they've still got a decent side. So Harris being out is a blow, but they've got some good youngsters, Bailey Siren and Josh Curran. They've got a few others. So I feel like they can still compete, but it definitely is a blow.
We've touched on Lodge, but the fact that it looks like he's added another string to his bow with sort of the ball playing through that middle, I really like the signing. I think that Lodge is realizing that maybe the game isn't for him. He's sort of trying to evolve to fit the modern style, and you obviously got to take your hat off to him. I think he had some really good moments today, ball playing.
Yeah, for sure. At the start of the year, I know the Guru was saying things about him that the game is probably evolving past these certain players, but he's one who's really adapted to it, and hats off to him.
Yeah, I was beating his drum pretty heavily to start the season. Obviously went down with the hamstring injury and a lot of people laughed at it. But when he came back for the Broncos, he was great, averaging 55 in the early parts of the year in a barren position. I think he was only 315K or something. And towards the back end of his Broncos career, pumping at 60 to 65. And I know that today is obviously inflated because of the minutes, but you can just see the efforts there from Lodge, the fact that he wants to be ball playing through the middle. He's looking for that offload. I think that's definitely going to help his standings moving forward. If you have him, do you hold?
Yeah, of course. He's a gun.
You play him regardless? If you don't have a Payne Haas, for example, do you go out of your way to trade a Lodge to a Haas, or are you happy with Lodge's output? Is it worth the 10 points for a trade that you may get from going to Haas? Is that sort of, I guess, what I'm getting at?
I feel like if you haven't got Haas and you've got the decision between Haas or Lodge, how much is the difference in price?
I think Lodge is the more expensive one, so you might gain some money from selling Lodge. But I'll give you this scenario. Let's say you're a team that's coming 800th, and you've got five trades left, and you've got Lodge. Do you go Haas? And you own Tohu as well. Like, there's two trades you're going to have to burn to get Haas in, because you're going to have to trade Tohu out, maybe Lodge out, get someone else in, like a Fafita. Personally, I think if Lodge is going to get you 60 and Haas is going to get you 72, I just hold Lodge.
No, you hold Lodge. 100% hold Lodge. Haas is not worth the trade because Lodge could potentially outscore him from here till the end of the season.
I went early on Haas just because he was that rock bottom price, and that was the week that Lodge moved. But yeah, I think if you've got Lodge, you happily hold, because I think that Nathan Brown's going to call upon him to play big minutes. We saw it today, and I think moving forward that'll be the case. Speaking of big men playing big minutes, Viliam Kikau, Timmy Moody's just nailing it week in, week out. A 90 from him, how good?
Very good. Timmy couldn't believe it. He's playing him based on matchup, and this week he just kind of forced into it. So he's getting really lucky.
He is a bit of a flat track bully, though, isn't he? I remember him scoring 3 tries against the Bulldogs. He's a guy that doesn't have a phenomenal base, and you need these try scoring weeks from him. But when it's hot for people that are running well on Supercoach, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a lucky game, and once you hit that streak, you ride it as long as you can, because it doesn't last long.
The most consistent and the best centre wing, in my opinion, Brian Toto, does it again, week in, week out. Teams that don't have him, get him in. Teams that accidentally sold him, cough, cough, you get him back in. Mate, this was Tyrone May's but probably best game they've ever seen him play. Who needs Nathan Cleary when you've got Tyrone May? 87, probably only really a draft option.
How good is rugby league?
Charlie Staines, what are your thoughts on him? Because I put out on Instagram that he is one of the flops of the year, but people were sort of arguing that he did his job. But I didn't really see it. I never owned Staines. Did you jump on him preseason?
I did, but I played him every single week. He decided to not put out how good is rugby league.
And then the week that you didn't play him, he scores like 80.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty typical.
115. So I kind of kept playing him, and then I was over the fact of these small scores. So I was banned myself from playing him. Then he'd score big, and then I'd be like, okay, he's proven me wrong. Then he'd do it again.
All right. We called Jai Arrow a trap. I'm going to call Matt and Burton one for next year. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, agree.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Kyle Flanagan that you thought was going to be this year.
Mate, he scored 70 round one. I was over the moon. And then it all fizzled out, didn't it?
It was looking like a masterstroke, that call.
I remember you got me on after round one. We were saying, how good Flano is. Doesn't have a spot in the team anymore.
Yeah.
But Birdo, mate, I think he's a much better center than he is half. And the fact that I think the Bulldogs, they're trying to progress as a club, but I think they're recruiting in all the wrong areas. And I think paying $1 million a year for Cottridge and Adokar, they're not the signings to make. And I think Burton may suffer, and he's probably going to come into next season being, 550,000-570,000? And I think a lot of teams may get sucked into buying him based off his performance with Penrith.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going to happen there, but Bulldogs should have thrown the checkbook at Adam Reynolds, because I think he...
Throw the checkbook at Brandon Smith as well.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like them two would have absolutely changed their club for the better. What they're getting in Matt Burton, they'll definitely get a solid footballer, but they still need a 7.
And I know that he was never, ever going to sign for them, and they never, ever approached him, but the fact that someone like a James Fisher-Harris was off contract, I think the Bulldogs could have thrown big money at him just to try and bolster that pack. But obviously Fisher-Harris would never leave Penrith, but it's one of those signings I think the club needs just to get that forward pack moving, because they are, obviously we saw today they put up a good fight against the Bunnies, but it just seems like when the going gets tough, they sort of fold a little bit.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Mate, the Broncos, who I pinned a lot of my multis on this week, went down to the Tigers on the eve of the debut of the documentary. We could have written this one in hindsight, couldn't we?
Yeah, definitely not.
Jordan Rickey, 98, coming off the bench. Obviously, the injury to TC Rabadi got Rickey on. Payne Hollis with an 88 as well. Thomas Flegler, a guy that I had as my fourth reserve and swapped to Jason Saab. Never, ever great. Tyson Gamble, 66. A lot of these guys we're brushing over probably aren't relevant. But Tessie New, 61, playing fullback. This is a position that he needs to be playing, in my opinion. And had him in my hypothetical Origin 1 team. Mm-hmm. I remember that post quite well. That went down well. But Tessie New at a decent price to maybe slot in as a fifth or sixth centre wing option.
Don't hate it, don't love it, but I definitely see the appeal. He's looking really good at fullback, and the fullbacks playing in center wing are absolute gold this year.
You say that, mate, but I remember buying Bally Simonson and one Cody Ramsey, so I might have to hard disagree there. I don't know what Tony Staggs did to his Broncos teammates this game, but he did not get past the ball once. I remember he was in open space twice, and it took a fair bit to get his first try on the board. But Staggs with a 46, the game plan needs to be simple for the Broncos. It's just give Staggs the ball.
even the try he got, that it looks like they didn't want to pass it to him when he was open then.
Exactly. I think Gamble put Ricky through, and Ricky just went to go himself. And the one before, Tessie knew, was why he had Staggs unmarked to 20 meters out and just didn't get it.
Yeah, that wasn't any good. Staggs was actually disallowed a try assist and line break assist with the obstruction call from Reese Kennedy, I think it was. So that would have boosted his score up to about 70 odds. So I feel like with a score of 46 with updates to come, is still very good signs considering he's just come back from an ACL injury.
We touched on this on the Supercoach Experience podcast. I'm a big fan of picking him up if you're in a position to throw some shit at the wall and hope it sticks. You in the same boat?
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a good buy, and definitely I haven't seen their draw, but if it's juicy, I'd definitely get my toes in that one.
I think the Broncos have an okay matchup for the next 3 weeks or so because I have Cleary in my draft team. I picked up Gamble just as a sort of stopgap because I think the Broncos had an okay draw. So I think for Stags, people are looking at him. There's some good signs coming up. Mate, I'll let you take off with the Tigers top scoring, Adam Dewey.
Adam Dewey, love him. Got him in this week. 144. I mean, 5 try assists really helps, doesn't it? Needed him to go over for my multi to get up. It wasn't to be, but 144, I'll take that. I expect him to be in the top 3 traded in next week, but I guess we'll see. But yeah, he's a massive buy. And have a look at his stats all year. I think they'll surprise you.
Especially his stats at 5'8", not so much his stats at centre. I mean, he did have one good game in centre. He turned up as well, but 5'8" is really where he excels. And I'm not too sure what Coach Michael Maguire was thinking, taking him out of that spot, that he made that right edge so good. I think that's good for Nofo-Limmer as well when he's playing 5'8". We saw Nofo get a 73, a guy that you and I have both been pretty keen on considering the draw they've got and the price that he is. Dane Laurie. Look, I know the Penrith Panthers aren't going to use him to his full potential, and it's fantastic to see the Tigers get him, and what a pickup he was.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like he's just, if you held him, you're probably cheering. I assume most would have sold, but for the Tigers, he's a great prospect for the future.
Now, I can't remember who it was in the Turbo Hemi group chat, but talk about how arsey Supercoach is. I think they said Stefano was their AE. It may be between Stefano and Angus Crichton, and the fact that Angus Crichton pumping out a fantastic score as your AE shows that some people do run pretty hot in this game.
I think it was Brew.
It might have been Brew. Yeah, it might have been Brew, actually, the fact that he got Angus Crichton his AE because Stefano went over 90. You don't ride that sort of stuff.
No, definitely not. I feel like if you told me Utukumanu would have been a nice option to end the year, I wouldn't have sold him so early because I know he could end the season with a 70 average.
Yeah, it's just the problem is, like, I think Mike Maguire chopped and changed him too much. A guy that probably, outside of Staines, had the most hype coming in that didn't really deliver to start the season, did he?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like these young forwards especially, they're going to warm into the season, and this is his time to shine this part of the season.
I think he's the Tigers' best player. Luciano Lua continues to put out some pretty good scores, a 72 from him. Not someone you're looking at buying, but a guy that people would have looked to pick up for the buy that maybe have held this long.
Yeah, I actually had him, and I sold him, I think, around 15 or something.
Just after he had the buy, he sort of did his job for you?
Yeah, he did the job. He was constantly punching out these regular scores. He doesn't go massive, so you want that high ceiling player that can get you above 100.
We speak of high ceiling forwards, mate. Cam Murray, 81, probably going to be one of the most trending options for Tohu Harris. I think he's really hit his strides. I remember during the middle portions of the year, he was only getting 30s or so in base and not a guy that was attractive one bit, but the last couple of weeks, he's really found that attacking fortitude to the middle third of the field.
Yeah, that's for sure. I feel like this is his time to shine later in the season, and the Bunnies are going to come in hot.
I think so too. Cody Walker, 72, but I suspect a fair bit of updates are coming his way. Probably a little bit of a failure for this week, considering the expectations that were put on him.
I think the fact that Hines scored 166, the expectations were massive for Cody Walker to at least score 100 this week, and would have put down a lot of captainers.
Even though he went off midway through the game, you'll still take a 67 from Coda from Alex Johnson, won't you?
Oh, for sure. I don't have him, so I wish he went off with 6.
Yeah, it's one of these ones that I hated. I hated buying him because I hate buying those high center wing, those high ceiling guys that could definitely go off for a 5. Yeah. But I think just the try scoring form that he was in, I think last week he scored 13 tries in 5 games. That will take him to 15 tries in 6 games. Simply ridiculous. A genuine chance to break Ken Irvine's all-time try-scoring record. A couple of guys over 60, Keelan Kulmutungi, a guy that had a lot of hype that didn't really do a whole lot and then just had like a four-week period midway through the year, like round 9 to round 13, I think it was, that he exploded and has really nailed down that the edge spot and pumped out another 60-odd.
That's his spot. He's the Olakau'atu 2.0. I feel like choose one of them as a pod for the run home and who knows.
Dane Gagai, a guy that I had at the start of the year and I sold him the week he went off for 150, and since then he's gone strength to strength. As someone that did own Gagai, though, it's a nervous watch because he's the bloke that does nothing and then he'll just pull attacking set out of nowhere to pump up his price. Probably not a guy I'd look to be targeting, but if you have him, you hold. Would you agree?
I actually think he might be a target, especially Braden Burns gets that left center spot and he plays left wing. Look at what AJ's been doing on that left wing. Could be a sneaky pod.
I guess it's just the eye test. I owned him, so I watched him pretty close. And a lot of those set players just cut out Gagai completely. But with Luttrell back, who knows? I mean, I think at the moment, Gagai is benefiting from no Luttrell because Cody Walker has to sit a little bit narrower and the ball to Gagai isn't going as far, if that makes sense. But with Luttrell, it's that extra sort of passage that the ball can pass through. So yeah. I think I'd wait until Luttrell comes back and seeing a game before I jump on Gagai. But great base stats as well. For the Bulldogs, mate, there isn't too much. Despite them scoring 24 points, there isn't too many big names here. Jaden Ockhambor in his first game back for the club got a 61. Corey Allen finally did something, got a 59. But there isn't too much considering they did score 4 tries.
Yeah, I guess they share the stats kind of around with each other because they don't know where their attacking force is. So they kind of just it's like a lottery whoever scores the points with them.
Not a super coach thing, mate, but what was Lachlan Lewis doing?
Oh, I thought it was funny.
What was happening?
I don't know.
It wasn't a punch. It wasn't like a jersey grab. It was just like just a full hug just to the ground.
Dominant tackle. I feel like it wasn't high, so you shouldn't have got sent off.
Kidding. I don't know. I saw it because I heard the halftime whistle go and I sort of just clocked off for a bit. And then I just heard it all kick off and I had to rewind to see what was happening. And that was just strange. Mate, one person I'll touch on before we wrap up today, Luke Thompson. Just sort of, I suspected this with Josh Jackson coming back into the side, but I didn't expect Luke Thompson to drop off as much as he has. He's gone from 65s pushing 70s to barely scraping 50s. What do we do with Luke Thompson if he's still in our sides?
I guess if you have the trades, sell him. And hopefully you got jewels that you could get maybe a back in that's got a good run or something, or get a Haas or a Lodge, as we said. But who knows? He might be homesick sometime soon.
Before we go, one man I didn't touch on, a pretty popular trade in Tane Milne. How would you rate the game from him? 56 below expectation?
I feel like that's what you would have expected, right? Like, what do you expect when you're chasing 127 from 3 tries? Someone can't score 3 tries every week. You've got to go off their pass.
Unless you're Alex Johnston.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's why I didn't jump on him, but
I think you hit the nail on the head there, mate. Like what do you expect from a center wing that doesn't have a huge base playing on a non-dominant side?
Exactly. I feel like that's the exact reason 59 is good, because he's playing on the wrong side. Like, Rabideau's really good on the left side. So, I don't know.
Also, outside Campbell Graham at full strength, who they love to use in attack rather than hitting the wing. Obviously, went off midway through the game with the HIA. But I think when Campbell Graham's back, it might not be the best for Tane Milne. But it's a guy that you play on matchups, and how well the Rabideaus are playing. You've just got to stick with him. One question I have for you before we go, mate, post on Facebook. I think Melbourne Storm are head and shoulders the best team in the comp by far, and a full-strength Penrith Panthers don't come close to them. Who was your tip for the comp?
Manly.
Manly. Bloody Turbo. To be fair, if any player could single-handedly win a comp, it would be him.
I think I'll come back to you in round 20 when Manly play Melbourne. Hopefully, they're both at full strength. And
Hopefully. So who are we missing? We're missing Adokar, Welch, Grant Pappenhausen, and Nelson Aspasolomona. And the Penrith boys are missing, obviously, their representative halves.
The DCE, Jake, and Tom. And the players
missing... And Ben. You forgot about Ben, mate.
and Ben, and that's probably equals up to the amount getting paid that all the players on Melbourne were missing out on. So that just proves how much of the salary cap Manly are taking up with them players.
As a Manly fan, I'll put this to you. Full strength Parramatta versus a full strength Manly. Who do you have? Obviously, you've got to take Manly, but I think it'd be a pretty close game. I think you guys might just edge it.
I think we saw that a couple of weeks ago at Bankwest when Tommy went 150 plus. Manly.
Tommy's having a season to remember. We saw Teddy average, I think it was 93 last year, and we thought that was out of this world. And Cleary and Turbo just making fun of that score, aren't they?
They really are. I don't know if it's just a one-off or if it's the new normal going forward. Are they freaks or is the new rules encouraging this type of play? I don't know. I guess if he ends the season with 120-plus average, then I wouldn't know.
It'll be the greatest Supercoach season by a very long way, and Nathan Cleary will feel very, very stiff. Lastly, I know I said lastly a couple of times, but are we spending half our salary to get Cleary and Turbo in next year?
With one, definitely. 100%. They're the best players in Supercoach. I can see myself possibly starting without Turbo if they have a toughish draw.
And if he's like over 900K?
He should be, right? Or 800 to 900K. What was Cleary this year? 850?
I think Teddy started off 880, and then he was the highest. But
So Cleary was 750. That's severe unders.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the fact that no one else was there, like one else even came close. I think Cleary was, I think the next best may have been DCE. And I think he was like 21 points clear. So it just shows you the dominance that Cleary had. But I think with how weak the halfback position is in Supercoach, not saying that the class of halfbacks we have in the comp now weak, but just in terms of Supercoach scoring, Cleary plays a much different game. He loves to take the line on a little bit more than these other halves. I think he's a certified must-have. But you could maybe get around the idea of not getting Turbo because of how stacked the fullback position is and the fact that we probably could get Teddy in at such a reduced price.
Yes, but you would have to have a plan 100% to get him in.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have to sort of look 3 or 4 weeks. I think next year preseason planning will be crucial because you're going to have to look 4 or 5 weeks in advance and just say, if Turbo goes off, like, how do we pull the squad apart to get him in? Similar to what teams are doing now with Cleary. If he comes back and brains it, teams are going to have to find $1 million out of their ass to and two trades probably as well to get him in.
Three trades, two nuffs of premium players, you've got to fork out $1 million.
Yeah, so obviously you'd probably go a Burton or an SJ. There's 500K. You're going to have to bin someone else as well. And enough, you're right, mate. Yeah, it's going to be close to three trades and a lot of money in the bank too, which is why I'm not too sure what your stance on Cleary was, but I advocate that if you are going to pull the pin and selling, you probably don't get him back.
Yep, I agree.
All right, mate, thank you very much for giving me your Sunday night. I appreciate it. I'm probably going to get you back on to finish up the end of the year. We're going to have a lot of award shows coming up, and I'd love to get your guys' input. But as I said, mate, thanks very much. Give yourself a plug.
Cheers, mate. Supercoach experience. That's it.
You'll see my beautiful face on there last week, I think. Went on there, did the game show, managed to fluke a couple of correct answers, and it was good fun.
4 out of 5, so you might be back to end the year to do the grand final game show.
Fingers crossed. All right, Sav, mate, thank you very much for coming on.
All right, see you later.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.